Alrighty, welcome back to Healing Ourselves, Heals Our Hoods podcast, y'all. We have a special guest who has been here before. She has gifted us her story with postpartum in the first season. In the second season, you also just had she just had a second baby. So we're gonna invite her through. Her name is Becca Ferguson. Becca, welcome.
Hello,
It
hello.
is a pleasure to have you. So before we even jump in, I just want to say I am so appreciative of where this episode is going to go, y'all. I was just telling Becca, me and Becca talked like 15 minutes before this podcast, and that should have been recorded. So I apologize because we were kind of going really deep into gentle parenting, and maybe most likely we'll probably jump into that again here. But something I'm really looking forward to in this episode is that Becca navigated her first pregnancy with postpartum depression. I just want to hear, how has the second pregnancy been? How has postpartum either shown up or been prevented this season, and more so in that? So just jumping right on into it, Becca. Let's talk about it. How was the experience of this second pregnancy?
So far, I feel like it's been an honor of like I've talked about it somewhat on my social media of I really feel like God gave me the second one of like you didn't get to enjoy the first one, so here you go. And taking that, there is hard days. There is definitely hard days. Like postpartum, as much as like preventative steps like I took in place, or my partner made sure to make sure like we had things arranged, it still crept on in and it still creeps on in. Like there's still days where I'm just like, I don't want to go outside. Like I could text my friends, but like I don't want to see anybody. And I don't know, but I do feel like this time it's healing for sure. Because with the first one, I would have never, I think if we go back however many years the first podcast was, like I would have never done that shit again. But this time I do feel like, and maybe because postpartum had got so deep last time with like suicide ideation of what if I missed out on all of this? And that has been just such an honor to be able to be in like a point to receive and acknowledge that it's God's gift that I'm in the spaces that I'm in, that I get another girl to raise in this world. And just seeing, how much happiness like she's brought me and Johnny, that she's brought her sister. Like she is really like she is the completion. And as much as like I never knew I wanted her, I couldn't imagine my life without her. Like she's just been so great. So
I love hearing that because I do remember in the first episode where we had you at, you were so against having other kids. You said, "I am done. This is
girl.
my lemon." And so to hear you on the other side and saying, like, I can't imagine my life without her, and maybe this was a gift in disguise that I never knew I needed to heal what that first experience was for me. And if you can just give a little bit of insight to folks or to listeners who maybe haven't listened to the first episode yet, what were some of the
For
hard parts,
sure.
the hardest moments with the first pregnancy that are a little different in this one?
Yeah, I think with our first one, our partnership was not good. Like me and Johnny were just not good. And it was very like I don't even want to say toxic, 'cause I don't think it was a toxic situation. We were just still kids. Like anybody watching this, wait until your 30s to have kids because it's a different world. Like this is peace. But in our 20s, like we were still figuring us out, like Johnny had just graduated college. At that time, we had guardianship of his brothers living with us in a different state that we didn't have anybody in there, I think at that point, I mean, they were out of the apartment, so like Kali was 30 minutes away, but everybody's like doing their own thing at that point that life isn't happening, or maybe Kali had just moved back to LA, like something like, but I felt like really nobody was there. Like the village makes a difference. And even here, maybe it's not everybody in the room at the same time, but everybody was on call. And I think because of the first, Nevaeh got really deep to where I did have, almost attempted suicide a week after having her. And coming out on the other side, deciding like, I'm gonna stop trying to breastfeed. I'm not about to try to do this anymore. It's taking a toll on my mental health. I don't even know who I am anymore. And I think in comparison now to the newborn, we're back home. So that's been a game changer. Like our people are 5 minutes away. Like everybody's here. But I also think of putting myself back in to what fills me. Like nothing else stopped. Even though things should have stopped for me, and like now in hindsight, as I'm like getting ready to go back to work, I'm like, okay, you should have rested a little bit more. But it still gave my life so much individual identity that I wasn't just like a new mom. And I think for the longest time, like now looking back on it, I think that's what I was afraid to lose. I was so afraid to lose myself again. Of like, bro, I busted my ass to find me. And I like all these things and new layers of Becca, like I fought for her. I don't want to give her up. But in like, Johnny's been so great in this experience. And my family, like everybody has just been so like, we could take her. Do you need to go to cheer practice? I could take her. Do you need to go volunteer at church? Like, drop off the baby to where it's like Becca still just gets to be Becca. And then when my cup is filled in, I'm able to come back and I'm like openly able to serve my family. And I think that has been like the biggest game changer. Like I prioritized myself so incredibly much this time. That last time, I felt like I looked up 3 years after and was like, I have no clue who I'm looking at in the mirror. And I'm supposed to be raising this confident, like this young girl who's going to grow up to a woman and teach her about confidence and self-love and all these things. And I don't even love who I am at this point. So it's been a world of a difference. Things came easier this time with the second than the first one. Breastfeeding journey came a lot easier to where I was like, it's not a job. Like I'm just able, like my body's just able to do this now. And it wasn't able, but it stress levels are different. Like I was 28, I think, when I had Nevaeh, and 36 with the baby. But I'm a lot more mature to where, we're not worried about finances or how we're about to survive. Like I'm really able to just be in this bubble this time and just experience my baby and my family.
I love that. I think that speaks to the testament of mothering outside of survival mode. I think in the first experience, I heard a lot of just, I'm surviving. Like, we got this going on. There's this going on top of it. And we're taking care of these. And this is the situation. And we're away from our village on top of that. And that sense of survival, especially because your identity switches. People say at the moment your baby's born, but I think the moment you are carrying the
Oh,
child, you
yes.
start to feel parts of yourself being altered. You're transforming into something that you've never been before, and there's such great responsibility with this new title that you're like, where the hell is this manual for it?
Right,
Because that's
right.
messed up. And
Yeah.
hearing you talk about the village and the lack of village where you were, because you guys were out of state, and hearing the experience of you being closer and having the proximity of people being 5 minutes away, I think that really just speaks to how in this season of this you were more so already placed with stability. You had your the household in order, you have your village close by, then you have the support of people saying, I got you, what do you need? Not
Yes.
you as a mother, but what does Becca need as a human being
Yeah.
outside of this role? I can step in and watch her and guide her while you take care of you. And I hear a lot of that. How do you feel like that support has giving you a full circle experience from the first to the second, and how in what ways has it repaired some of that trauma from the first one?
I think, I go back to the episode that me and Johnny were on when we had like we split and then we came back. And I can now look at like the village that I've created outside of like our friends of the longevity side. So the cheer coaches, my church family, to where I've created a village that I went looking for when me and Johnny were split. And it's like, bro, it was here the whole time. You just had to get through this. And these friendships and these relationships that you have now, it's not just you. These are people who show up for your kids, because right after I had the baby, the organization changed our cheer practice field to the like park right next to the house. So I'm over here like I could walk down to the park. Like let me go back to practice. Let me go see my kids over there. And it's like seeing them of like coaching changed everything for me. Coaching made me realize I have more room in my heart for another kid, that I have more love to give, and even having more doesn't negate the feelings that I have for my first one. And so being able to be around people and moms who are living the same lifestyle, going through the same things, and it not being like, what can I do? What does the baby need? What does this need? Da, da, da. But it's like, can I come pick up Nevaeh? Can I come grab her? Like, let me take her to practice so you could stay home, like, and you can rest a little bit more, or to where it's become like, it's not just Becca's village anymore, but it's everybody that's here to uplift the family. And these husbands that like complain about cheerleading 90% of the time, but like everybody shows up for it. But it has been such a restorative time. And I think more so for me and Johnny of, how to navigate as partners still with a newborn. And then we still have this 8-year-old that we have to show up for. Like that can't slip. And a big thing that that we from the very beginning that we had told ourselves, like before the baby came, of like the baby can wait, but the oldest one will remember. And we have to like make sure that it's not too much of like, hold on, let me go do this. Hold on, let me go do that. Hold on, let me do, like, your sister needs this. And it's the baby can wait. She has no memory up until 2 years. Like, she's fine. She's in a safe place. But really making sure like that relationship is still like nurtured and harbored with our oldest one of like, there is no, there, yeah, there, there's just no give. To make sure she still knows that she has a place and her place is protected with us.
Nevaeh has her own personality and her own experiences in the world that are different from Samaya, right? If I'm pronouncing it correctly.
Samaya.
Samaya, thank you. And I feel like Samaya, as you are expressing, a lot of your parenting with her was already designed by your parenting with Nevaeh. The good, the bad, the barriers, the things I would do different. And so let's kind of jump into that. Giving into your experiences as a mother with Nevaeh, how has that prepared you for this new baby?
Yeah, we're swinging on site with the new baby. I'm kidding. But no, I will, to go back to like our conversation in the beginning, I will not with Samaya, gentle parent in its entirety ever again. I do think they're looking at Nevaeh's upbringing and like our bond, I think that gentle parenting brought us, we're really able to like, Johnny will go pick her up from school and he'll be like, oh, how's your day? And she's like, oh, it was fine. It was good. And then I'll pick her up from school and it's like, she's telling me everything of all the details and the friends and just all the things, to where I do think with Samaya, I want to be able to like let's talk about it. How does this make you feel? And who is so and so? And like, you know, that safe space to come and talk to me, come in, like, allow me to be here. And I want to be in your world. I want to exist in your world. I also want you to be able to communicate how things make you feel and, you know, what your ideas are. And I want you to be comfortable having emotions and talking about those emotions. Like, I don't ever want shame to be around your feelings. However, and I think it's also different for every kid, because I will say that, like, me just knowing who Nevaeh is, but then I see my nephews and nieces, I'm like, you couldn't get parented that way because of who you are. Nevaeh could get parented that way because of who she is. Like, I can raise my voice and Nevaeh is just like that. Like, I will never forget Johnny be like, don't snap at her, she's not a dog. But I would like snap my fingers and like point, and she would already know, like, shit, she's listening to me. She just saw me do that. Like, you know, like she would stop. To where, but there's just so much with our society today that I think we've over nurtured our children. To where I don't see me doing that with Samaya at all. You know, there definitely needs to be discipline with boundaries and discipline with communication. But I don't think, and you know, who knows, I could be like putting my foot in my mouth because she could just end up being just like her sister, and me raising my voice is enough for her. But I felt like when I was parenting Nevaeh, and when we were parenting and still are, but like really in the thick of like her ages, me and Johnny went so back and forth on like, how do we discipline and how do we talk about boundaries and how do we get her, I don't want to say like survival, but how do we get her, for her to like have a voice for herself when we're not there? And that has always been such like a, you know, Johnny's rough and tough. And he's like, nah, beat the ass. Like, and I'm over here like, well, let's talk about it. And like, you know, go find a teacher, tell them that's like, find an adult. But there has to be a balance of the two. Like now, we found out I was pregnant, I was so scared of the age gap. And now I'm like so thankful of the age gap because I'm like, okay, I got to just see how like the toddler phases raised, you know, this 8-year-old, almost 9-year-old. Okay, now I have to like figure this out within the next 3 years before you're getting into like these preteen years and before you're at high school, before they eat you alive out there. Like, so I can't, we can't be, we got to fix some things. But I do, you know, looking in the comparison of the two, like I could definitely, gentle parenting is out the window. Like I just could not. I can't do it 2 times in a row.
Yeah, and I know we were talking about that right before, you know, I pressed record and we talked about how we're recognizing that at the end of the day, the world is what it is. It's not always a safe place, and it's always a place that you got to be ready to defend yourself, not just vocally with your voice, but with your hands too. I expressed to Becca earlier that my son just started preschool. He went on his second day and already got beat up by a kid. And so now my son is traumatized. You don't want to go back to school. And so the one thing that bothered me is, why didn't you defend yourself? And you're right, Becca. I think a lot of that comes from the over-nurturement that we naturally as mothers engage in. When I knew my baby was hurt, my first immediate thought was, I'm pulling my baby out that school. He ain't going to school no more. He gonna stay at home where I can control the environment. I can ensure he's safe. I could be the safe person. But then my partner is like, absolutely not. Because that is not preparing him for the real world. He has to learn how to become resilient. And in my head, in the moment when my baby's injured, I'm just all focused on my emotion of my child being hurt. And from that place of fear, I felt like my parenting was lacking because I was aiming for more of the gentle parenting and keep you in a bubble and protect you from the world. But in actuality, one day I have to surrender my son to the world because I can't be here forever. And if I keep him in the proximity of my house, what survival skills would he have to really maintain himself outside of parents? And I feel like the gentle parenting oftentimes eliminates for that resilience and for, like you said, you brought up too, like you got to learn how to get it up out the mud too. We were the ones that had to survive in the mud, swim through the mud, climb out the mud, and now we're raising kids that are growing up in completely different neighborhoods, completely different opportunities, completely different access to certain traumas, and because of that, by default, they're not in the mud no more.
Right.
My baby still got to know what their feet look like in the mud. Like we talked about, your stomach got to hurt some days, right? Like you're going to have to feel something to know how to regulate yourself and function. And I hear that when you're bringing up the strategies used with Nevaeh and how you're altering that moving forward. And so I'm just really excited to hear, you express a little bit more about the grief in that chapter of the first chapter. And I hear the joy and the excitement that's coming from the second chapter as it relates to pregnancy. And so more so moving into the lesson phase, again, doing the 3L collective theory, that is your losses plus your lessons equals your legacy. I think what I want to lean into is what resources, tools, or people helped you begin to heal and recenter throughout this second postpartum experience.
God, like when I tell you, like the biggest difference of Nevaeh and Samaya, it was literally my proximity to God, like involved in the church this entire pregnancy, serving like consistent, like it is like I don't miss my serve days. Like that is my time to like go be a servant to the Lord, like in his house. But I think that's been all of it. Like God's not just like a task in this season for me. Like that I'm in the boat all the time with him. Like it's literally been a difference. And I do thank God for the darkness with Nevaeh and the grief with Nevaeh, because that brought me to him. But stepping into it with Samaya of like, no, that this is my foundation and this is what I'm gonna be. And I like that's still my father of what I'm supposed to do. And I still did therapy. Like I definitely still, I'm not one of those people where it's like, well, if you believe in God, then you can't believe in therapy. And it's like, no, I think it's a duality, because I'm still human and I still live in a world. But therapy did not hit this time. I was blessed with an amazing therapist, that actually diagnosed me when Nevaeh was 2 or 3. And I was in like aggressive therapy with her for over a year. And she was phenomenal. There was nobody like her. And I really still wish she was accepting new patients this time around. But it just did not hit. And, there were really times where, there was a day where I got off therapy and I was just like, I think it's time for medication. Like, and also trying to have to like explain that to your spouse. I think a male, and I hope the males don't come for you in the comments when I say this, like, she don't know what you're talking about, but I think the male experience is so different from the female experience because we're so emotion-based and feeling-based, to where men are more logical. Don't come for me, but it's hard for them to understand. Like, this is what I'm feeling. And at least for me and Johnny, like, I think it was more so of a struggle because the podcast was the first time anybody had really heard of how deep it got with Nevaeh and what that night almost committing suicide looked like. Like, nobody knew. So this time I felt like everybody was like, high beams on, like, hey, hold up, da da da. Like, to where it was almost like I'm not glass. I'm not about to break. Like I am strong. I am a survivor. Like And I will tell you if I need you. And sometimes I may not. But guess what? That's your role as a friend to roll up anyways. But I think it was just, for me and talking to Johnny, he was so, you should find a therapist before everything gets out of hand. You should do this before, let's take the he really drove that car of let's get the game plan ready in case it happens. And I was more so like, I feel fine and I feel great and all these things. And yes, I feel fine and I feel great. And it has never, there has been no indication of it falling that deep again, which is great. I mean, we're also 4 months into it, so praise God, but hope it stays away. But there's still been those layers of postpartum of and trying to explain that to him of reluctant to even hop on for my therapy appointments because I'm like, I feel like she's not getting it. Or I feel like because I just had the baby, she keeps telling me everything is normal. And this is not normal. I know how I'd felt a year ago, and this is not what I'm feeling. And it was almost like I was leading that conversation of hey, so, I could feel me getting, I could feel like, hey, I'm about to hit a low. I can feel me getting there. And when I hit a low, it's about to take me out for a week. And I can't be taken out right now. But she would just be, remember, it's normal. And I'm like, girl, if I could swing through this computer screen because it's not normal and I need you to help me. I am here. You're supposed to help me. And I remember I was telling her, I'm open to homework assignments. I'm open to tasks. I'm such a task-oriented person. If you could tell me, okay, Becca, you need to go get a 30-minute walk-in. I don't give, everything else has to cease, but go outside. Okay. But she would sit there and be like, if you could, if you, sometimes it's not going to be 30 minutes. Sometimes it's just 5 minutes. And I'm like, this is not it. And so my last therapy session, I had got on and I remember I was just sad. There was just a lot of things happening. I do think I kept myself a little too busy in this maternity leave time, to where the everyday busyness is still overwhelming on top of the newborn and on top of still trying to show up and be a mom, and I'm still trying to show up and be a great partner. To where a lot of things just always fell. It felt like my plates fell all the time. And I remember getting on in this very room, and I was like, I'm gonna talk to her about medication because at this point, it just everything feels numb. My baseline is sadness. And then when I'm really happy, I can feel that really happy. But any other time, I'm just sad or I'm just blah. There's literally no thoughts happening in my head. There's just, and I used to tell Johnny, it just feels like I'm at a standstill because I just had this baby and everybody else is just moving around me. And it feels so sad because you, it's almost a feeling of getting left behind in a sense, but it's just people running circles around you. This is just my only job is to care for this baby. So it just got social media is a hell of a drug because I could post these things all the time of this is great and she smiled today and we're on new foods and what a blessing. And I would literally, there would be days where I would put my phone down and I would just sit on the couch and cry. For sometimes for nothing, sometimes for one thing that is so small, but it felt huge. And so I would share this in that therapy of hey, I think it's time for medication. I think it's time we look into some things. She was just like, okay, all right, if that's what you want to do. Oh my girl, this is not it. And I remember I got off the phone and I was just like, and you know, she did ask me, she's like, do you feel comfortable having that conversation with your partner? Do you feel like he would be supportive? And before I share what I'm about to share, if it really came down to me making a decision for myself and my body, Johnny's always gonna be game on. But I get off the computer and I go downstairs and I'm like, hey, I think it's time for medication. He's like, for what? Like, you know, what the hell you need medication for? And so like trying to explain this to him of like, it feels like nothing. It just feels like nothing unless I'm crying and I like my brain knows I'm sad, or unless I'm laughing and my brain knows that's happiness or that's joy. Like everything just feels like nothing. And then small groups at church came out. And I was like, you know what? I've put off this group the last 2 years, essentially, or a year and a half. I'm on maternity leave. So, what else? I mean, I was doing a lot with my time, but what else am I going to do with my time? And I got involved in a small group. And it was really bringing me around those women and being really vulnerable of I need prayers. And it's not ever of a sense of like a physical help. I just need you to keep me in your prayers that, you know, the joy comes back, the happiness comes back. And it took a lot of them for them to like, you don't have to say yes to everything. Like, if you're, and one of them had told me, if you're too busy to open your Bible, you're busy with the wrong things. And I was just like, all right, Becca, like, you're just too busy. Like, your priorities are wrong now. And so I do think, like, in hindsight of like this very long-winded answer I gave you of like, I got in the boat with God and I never got out. And I think that has been the biggest lesson of my mid-30s, of parenting and who I want to be as a person when people see me, like how I want to show up in this world. Like, that was the number one relationship and priority for me.
I really love seeing you talk about it, but I also love seeing you flourish in it when you're posting the, you watching the sermons, when you're posting you at service. I feel that the awareness from the first experience with postpartum depression really helped change how you even approached yourself. And I could hear that through your responses. There were boundaries being created. There were practices being practiced. There was help being, you were reaching out for help and resources. And not oftentimes are those resources really helpful, right? But you were advocating in your voice to know that this shit, me and you meeting every week ain't gonna do no difference for my core, right? So let's wrap this up real quick. We'll
I
show.
was getting off those calls more frustrated than like, girl, if I'm about to do your job, just let me know I'm about to do your job. Like,
Like, what are we doing here, right?
right. You're wasting my time at this point.
Exactly. And honestly, that's a real experience that even I went through my postpartum. I had two different therapists. One who she was so inspired by who I was as a person in my advocacy role that she just wanted to me to tell her how to write a book.
Yeah.
And I'm like, girl, I'm here because I'm trying to detach myself from all these titles and all these
Right.
roles. I'm trying to figure out myself outside of motherhood, outside of work, outside of all these roles that I feel like are heavy and dependent on me. And so I just want to validate that sometimes you even reaching out for resources or therapists might not be the best fit, or maybe not the person may not be the best fit, but it doesn't mean that the practices of which therapy offers isn't, you know, all the way what could be helpful. But I think you assessing that and having skills to assess that to say, this ain't working for me. I'm still I, actually, like you said, I'm actually, it's making it worse because every time I talk to you, I just want to swing through the damn, I want to swing through the damn Zoom. And so, wow, what in a full circle, but you to also ground yourself that the relationship that you have with God this time moving forward has been keeping you not just grounded, but I hear you using the analogy of being on a boat with him, and the boat representation to me brought up the analogy of an anchor, of like, oh, you anchored with God. You know you ain't going nowhere. No matter what storm is coming, no matter how heavy the rain is, you know that you being on this boat and being on the boat strategically with God is going to keep you all the way through that journey. And so I guess the next question I have is, what from this experience have you learned about love for yourself or your child in this healing process?
I think the biggest lesson that I think I've had from all of this is, don't count yourself out. Like, I could have told you up until the day I found out I was pregnant, I am one and done. I just wanted to create one really good human being in this world. Like, and I always, like, when I talk to people, like, I'm not raising children. I am raising a human being. Like, there will be some day where she will need to walk out on those doorsteps and I will not be with her. And I need to, that one has, she's got to do something. Like, I don't care what you do, but you go in the world and you lead with love and you lead with kindness and you let people know, like, this is who I am and I'm bringing something of a benefit to this world. To where I was good. I was like, that's it. Like, that's my mission. Like, that's the purpose. To where I counted myself out, or I started to count myself out and tell myself I was okay with counting myself out of what God already had planned. And it was just like, so you were about to strong arm his will because you were comfortable with that. And that's where I'm like, you know, me and Johnny we had to have some conversations last night about the wedding. I'm like, I'm trying to be obedient in this season. I'm trying to be an obedient daughter of God. And now when I look at this, because when I tell you, Desi, I could tell you the night I got pregnant. And because I literally sat there and was like, if it's your will, make it happen. And here we were 2 months later, and your girl was pregnant, losing her damn mind. Like, what did I do? And how did I get here? Like, I'm a fool for this. Like, I panicked. Like, bro, they're 8 years apart. I'm starting over. We haven't even been in this house for a month. Like, and I'm like, what the fuck? Like, what did you do? But really, like, and I came across, Johnny wasn't even living in the house at that point. Like, he was still taking care of his grandma. Like, nobody was here. And we weren't telling Nevaeh for, like, obvious reasons. So I'm like crying myself to sleep, like turned over crying myself to sleep. And I had came across a scripture in the book of Isaiah, and it was, or in the book of John, I want to say it is. And it's, you may not know now, but someday you'll understand. And like, that has been. And I remember just reading it and just being like, it's going to be a boy and I'm going to name him Isaiah. Like, this is what it is. Like, but there's just been so, and I'm like trying to remember like what your original question was at this point.
Yeah, the question was, in through the process of it, what did you learn about love for yourself or your child and in the healing process?
But yeah, so I do feel like, I feel like I was blocking so many blessings from telling myself like I was okay with this. And I was okay with not giving her a sibling. And I was okay with it just being us three. I've also realized how much weight I used to put on family functions because I didn't want her to be without. And that for me, not that I don't love my family, but like, if my siblings wanted to spend Christmas 2 years ago, they wanted to go spend Christmas Day with their spouses and their families, and I lost my shit. What do you mean? It's Christmas Day. Like, how come nobody's going to mom's? You guys don't prioritize family. Like, all this stuff. Like, but I've realized it was just because my scarcity of, well, then who is my daughter going to be with? And that's not fair. For, like, so if you guys are watching this, I'm really sorry for what I did. But it's like, I've totally realized of like, I put so much pressure on them and other people to always show up for Nevaeh because she didn't have a sibling. And, you know, I think everybody, you know, Johnny would tell me, like, it doesn't matter who comes and shows up for her because, like, we're there. And it's like, bro, we ain't shit. Like, she sees us every day. Like, when she's looking, you know, whether it be a competition or a school play or she's sideline cheering, whatever it is, like, she's asking, like, is so and so gonna come watch me? Is anybody coming to my game today? And I used to put so much weight on, like, everybody's gotta show up for her because she doesn't have anybody else. So I think that has, like, I've come to a lot of, like, revelations of, like, all these expectations that I was putting on everybody to show up for my kid because I was okay with being one and done. Like, and that's been insane. But
Wow. No, I think that that place is where I'm at right now. So I'm biting my tongue in a moment because oh my God, this is a journey. So for the listeners who are listening, I have two decided one and done, but I really do think that my journey might unfold differently. Who knows? Seeing Becca come from her position, because we built a sisterhood in this. We was one and done crew, click. So when I found out Becca was having another baby, I said, "Ooh, I gotta pray for her because I know
Her
she's
life is
going
over.
through it, right? I can't even imagine if that were me, my heart would be to my ass. Like, it's so much that comes because you're reminded by the traumas of the first one. But I think seeing you recognize the differences in where your life was at in that time frame versus where you were now, I can hear through your responses really gave you that confirmation and that support and that peace to feel like, okay, I got this. I got this, right? I could do this, even if there is an 8 year gap. And even though I got this and I'm still uncertain how to navigate this with two kids now, right? Because I've only ever had one, that I know I have a village of support to help me navigate that when it gets difficult. And so in closing off this podcast episode, if your children were to listen to this episode in the future, what do you hope they would understand from your journey?
I thought I was about to make it off this episode with no emotion. I was like, boy, I just made this in the clear. I would hope that they would take away is to find God and to be one with God. If you don't already have a foundation with our Creator, then before any relationships that you ever have in your life, that's the one that you need to seek out. And I hope that they would know, or when they describe me at some point in my life, my legacy, that their mom is a warrior and she's a survivor. Like, I think there's times as motherhood that, you know, we put a lot on ourselves and sometimes we stay too busy with trying to prove to the world that we're somebody that we forget to pause. Because they're only young for so long. We only have them. Nevaeh will be out of this house like quick, like next 10 years. And when I look at that and I'm like, I want them to remember dancing in the rain. And I want them to remember the magic of Christmas. And I want them to remember, you know, mom made it happen. And she fought like hell to be here to make it happen. And that mom was a villager. In order for the village that she had, it was because she was a villager. And not always when it was convenient and when it was easy, but we pushed through the hard and we show up for our people.
Becca, it has been such an honor to have you, your wisdom, and your love. I know your daughters are going to be looking forward to hearing this episode, especially because you are leaving a legacy by being so vulnerable to the world and allowing our listeners to really gain wisdom from your lived experiences. And so, Becca, just from a person, thank you for your
Of
truth.
course, of course.
Thank you for your lived experiences. And to everybody, as we close today's conversation, let's just take a moment to honor all mothers, okay? Dabs, collabs, praises, because mothers who love their babies, even when they were struggling to love themselves, is truly a journey. Healing isn't linear. We learned that in hearing Becca's experience too. That motherhood doesn't always require perfection either. Sometimes you're just discovering it as you go, but the goal is just to be present, have compassion, and support yourself and support your babies in the midst of this journey, because they're learning how to be kids too in a world that is getting ready to kind of eat them up once they become adults. And so if you're listening to this episode and you're going through a tough season, through whether postpartum and or just motherhood, just know that you're not alone. We all really appreciate you, Becca. Thank you again for having us on this episode. Is there any closing remarks that you have for our listeners?
I don't think so, man. I think, if you thought you were one and done, you better pray on it.
Not me dodging the statement. I
No.
appreciate that. That does give me hope though, because there are times where I'm like, how would I respond if that were to ever occur into my reality? And seeing you live it through personally for me has given me reassurance of it could get done. Okay.
Well, yeah. People do it all over with 11 kids. I don't know what their sanity
don't
looks like. I don't want to put that on you.
know about this.
But
I think two would be good.
man, it's plenty. Three's a crowd.
He's a crowd. And so I appreciate you. Thank you again, Becca, for being on the episode. And to all our listeners, sending so much love, peace, and joy to you. And to all, have an amazing rest of the week. We'll tap in with you on the next episode. Bye.
You just tapped into another powerful episode of Healing Ourselves Heals Our Hoods. Thank you, first off, for showing up for yourself and for the legacy that you're building. Remember that every loss we name, every lesson we share, becomes a part of the legacy that can't be erased. We're not just healing. We're shifting culture, we're breaking cycles, and we're making sure the hood we come from isn't the hood we leave behind. If this moved you, share it with somebody you love, follow, review, and come back next week. We're just getting started. Until next time, keep living the 3L way. That is, your losses plus your lessons equals a legacy. Peace, power, and purpose always.